Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, Harris Wishard. What's good, Harris?
What's going on, man? Just trying to survive the first snowstorm of the winter over here and hope everything's safe by you.
Yeah, it looks like Northeast is getting hit with some snow. I actually didn't even know it was coming. I was kind of surprised. Let's talk some NBA basketball and touch a little bit on the NFL later on.
Isn't there a playoff game tomorrow of some sort?
Yeah, I think there's a playoff game at 4:40 tomorrow. I know I'm going to be watching it.
Yeah, glued to the television. Big one.
But I was glued to the television last night. I was watching the Grizzlies and Warriors game. You know, it was a pretty close game in the first half. Then in the second half, it looked like the Warriors were about to pull away. And then the Grizzlies go on this huge run, and they come back from a 24-point deficit, and they win the game in overtime. I mean, what do you think about this game? I think there was a clip on Twitter where Draymond Green wasn't too happy with KD calling for the ISO. How do you feel?
Yeah, that was really be my only takeaway from it. You know, that would be my concern, you know, taking your foot off the gas pedal. But I was texting you throughout the game that it looked like Curry had kind of got his swagger back, and they were kind of letting him go a little bit. He had some plays that were reminiscent of the two MVP seasons. So all night it was a party, and something changed. They were up 24 in the middle of the third quarter. And, you know, in the fourth quarter, Curry sat out the first few minutes, and, you know, couldn't make a field goal for about first 8 minutes of the quarter. And, you know, Troy Daniels got hot. They struggled with Zebo, and they struggled with Gasol. And those two have caused problems for the Warriors in the past. But, I mean, I won't look too much into it. It's the second time they beat them. They're, you know, now they're 31-6. But if anything, maybe it's the I wouldn't say even call it an altercation between KD and Draymond, but it's one of those situations where, you know, there was so much positive stuff going on for them. They had around 90 after three, so real surprising result. I know a lot of people on the internet were going nuts over because they had just, you know, they're coming off the, you know, the blown lead last year in the finals, and now they, you know, I think this was the first time in 91 game, or they had a 91 game winning streak when they led by at least 20 at any point in the game. So surprising result, obviously, but I mean, there are still some positives, but you know, the Durant Green thing is something, you know, maybe to look at.
Yeah. Do you think closing is an issue for them? Obviously they blew the double digit lead on Christmas to the Cavs. They blow this game to Memphis. Do you think it's a chemistry, you know, not finding that rhythm yet, or is there an actual issue?
I don't know. I wouldn't look too much into it. I don't really think it's a closing issue as more as you know, just, you know, some bad breaks, also missed free throws too, uncharacteristic plays and some missed free throws also in last night's game. But I wouldn't think of it much as an issue. I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't know if a couple games, and you know, because what happened in the finals last year, and that we could put them in the category of teams that can't finish or close. I mean, I think Curry could have got some opportunities late in that game the way he was playing, but, you know, it's just one of those situations where the ball didn't bounce their way.
Yeah, I mean, last year they seemed like they were closing games in the third quarter and their bench was playing a majority of the fourth. I don't think there's really a huge issue. They just need to find the chemistry. Maybe last night Steph should have got some more touches in the fourth. Obviously, like you said, he was having a nice game. Does this Grizzly team present a threat to the Warriors in the playoff? You know, maybe not beating them, but, you know, give them a hard series, six or seven games, just because of, you know, Marc Gasol, Zebo. Mike Conley also had a nice game last night.
I don't know. I mean, they did have them, you know, up 2-1. We've mentioned this a couple years ago in the postseason. You know, Tony Allen is somebody that, you know, tries to bother people a little bit on the defensive end. I don't think so. I don't think in the postseason – this game gets away. I do think they got a little lax. They got, you know, this is January too. January is we're in the midst of the dog days of the NBA season. You know, guys just trying to fight to get to that, you know, all-star break. There's another like 10, 12, 15 games. So, you know, I don't think that this is going to be a major issue. I think the Grizzlies post a nice threat, but I still think, you know, the Clippers healthy, the Spurs healthy, are big, and maybe even to a certain extent the Rockets. But I think the Rockets play a style too similar to the Warriors for it to be a threat, because the Warriors do what they do just better. So I think it could be, they could pose a nice threat, but I just think in the postseason, like I had mentioned on Twitter yesterday, it's a different animal, and you know, it's a higher level of intensity, and I don't think this one would have gotten away.
Yeah, I think by the time the postseason starts and, you know, they're down the stretch, they're going to find the right chemistry. Closing game's going to be a little bit easier. They'll probably stick more to their offense and go less to iso ball, or, you know, and make things a little bit easier. I think right now it's just they're still working on some things. So by the time the playoffs come around, I don't think it'll be an issue.
Yeah, no, and the thing is between, you know, Curry, Durant, and Thompson, Green mentioned it also, is they're still working things out. And, you know, and Green had mentioned that he was – you know, kind of glad that this one got away, because not only like a wake-up call, but, you know, despite what you saw on Christmas and despite what people have said about Curry's offensive production, you know, 31-5, you know, you're throwing an all-time great player on this team, an already all-time great team. I still think they were expecting maybe some bumps in the road and some growing pains that didn't necessarily come. So I don't a little bit of a pimple that they have to pop after a bad performance in the fourth quarter OT last night, but I think it motivates them to continue to get better.
Yeah, and then the other game on ESPN, it was Bucks and Knicks. We saw this the other night. Obviously, Kristaps Porzingis going against Giannis Antetokounmpo, the unicorn versus the Greek freak.
That was a nice pronunciation there.
I appreciate it.
You're working on it. Well, he's telling you better learn his name.
Exactly. He made a joke that he was worried about all the votes getting missed because people couldn't spell his last name.
Yeah.
But, you know, both these guys look like they're going to be all-stars, yeah. Both having a great season. The Knicks got a nice win, which could be a turning point for their season. We'll touch on that a little bit, and then I got a good question for you.
Yeah. I want to ask you this question. I think the impressive thing last night for the Knicks was that this is a game that they're trailing in double figures. Do you think this can create some positive momentum for them going forward? Also, because no Rose in the fourth, Porzingis fouls out, Noah fouls out, and Ron Baker, out of all people, providing some nice spark in the backcourt and with some point guard duty. So is this a win that realistically can put the Knicks in a better position moving forward? Could they?
I mean, anytime you win a close game down the stretch against a team that might be better than you or around the same level that you're at, I think it definitely can boost your confidence. They were also on the losing streak, so that helps a lot. Yeah, Ron Baker had a nice game. He also caught an elbow in the face from your guy, Jason James.
Oh.
But it was kind of interesting. He played the whole fourth, no Rose, no Jennings. Yeah. So, I mean, also Melo stepped up. He had a big fourth quarter, and he had a lot of nice passes. Yeah. And they weren't just easy assists. They were great passes.
Melo made a huge three. And it was Chauncey Billups who – this was an interesting – segment on ABC. I'm sorry, not ABC, ESPN, excuse me. They asked Chauncey, who would you rather have right now, Jabari Parker or Melo? Now, keep in mind, Melo's been hearing it from Carl, his former coach, and Billups was a guy that played with Carmelo. And he played with him in Denver, and then he came to New York with him in that initial trade, if you remember correctly.
Yep.
Billups said Parker. And, you know, Melo's been catching a lot of criticism, obviously, being one of the better players on the team and being the leader of the team, we know about some of his shortcomings. But Billups, without real hesitation, said Parker. And, you know, Jabari Parker is a pretty nice player. And him and the Greek Freak have combined to be, you know, a very strong and formidable forward combination. But, you know, I was just surprised to hear that from his former teammate. And whether you agree with Parker over Melo or not, Melo responded in the fourth quarter, and Billups, you know, quickly almost like second-guessed himself by saying, you know, I never said Melo wasn't clutch, you know, great offensive talent. But so it was just interesting for me to see kind of Billups not take Melo's side on this one.
Yeah, that is interesting, being a former teammate. It's tough to say. I mean, I think Melo's still the better player. Jabari obviously has a bright future ahead of him. But talking about two guys that have a really, really bright future, who would you rather have going forward, Kristaps Porzingis or Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Very tough question. I would probably lean towards the Greek Freak, but this is reminiscent of our Anthony Davis question when we talked about Davis or the Greek Freak. Just because with Porzingis' size and his ability to stretch the floor, he's extremely valuable. And
and his impact as a rim protector, which is probably underrated.
Yeah, he had a stretch. He had a stretch yesterday where he hit a three, blocked two shots at the rim. I think he got Antetokounmpo's shot at the rim, and then hit like a 30-footer in a nice
30. Yeah, yep. It was all in one stretch too. That was a big momentum swing for the Knicks. Yeah,
in a 30-second stretch. So, you know, both extremely unique in that their build is, you know, I think Greek Freak is a little further along in his physical development as a athlete, but I think Doug Collins pointed to this. If there's any development of his outside game and his jump shot, we're looking at I don't know, I would say an all-time great. That's probably a strong way to put it. And Jason Kidd obviously speaks highly of him, but you hear all the right things about his work ethic and his attitude and the way his teammates respect him, and he has all the tools. So probably lean towards Greek Freak, but with hesitancy because of my respect for Porzingis and how he's handled everything in New York so far. So this is a real tough one for me.
Yeah, this is definitely a tough one. I think I'm probably going to lean with the Greek Freak as well, just because he handles the ball so much.
Yeah.
And that adds another element. Obviously, Kristaps, he handles the ball pretty well for a big himself. And he also is a great defender. But I think Giannis the way he's able to run the offense, you know, he's pretty much playing point guard this season most of the time. And defensively, he has a big-time ability. So, I mean, like you said, and Doug Collins said, when he adds that outside shot, it's going to be really tough to defend him.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, you bite that pump fake and all it takes is one stride to the rim. And then
Corey proposed something on Twitter that was pretty interesting. I'm sorry, not Corey. Matt did. Matt was speaking about if you swap LeBron and Giannis, who would you like? Would you like LeBron and the Bucks or Giannis being the member of the big three with Kevin Love and Kyrie? And, you know, that's paying the Greek Freak a very high compliment also, because we've seen any pretty much roster that LeBron goes to, what kind of impact that's had on the guys around him. So it would elevate a guy like Jabari Parker to a top 10 player in the league probably. So that's, I think, going even to another level. But
I don't think he's there yet. I mean, I think LeBron is such a better playmaker at this point and passer. You know, Giannis is a great passer, but LeBron's on a different level, and he has another gear that nobody else has.
Yeah. Well, no, not even the comparison, but just the roster.
Well, even if he went to the Bucks, I mean, I think that LeBron would probably get them to the finals.
Yeah.
It's crazy. A lot of defense on that team, a lot of length, a lot of young talent. And it'd be kind of interesting to see Jason Kidd and LeBron work together.
Yeah, that is actually true. And, yeah, so it's just a lot of praise, obviously, for the Greek Freak. He's an up-and-coming superstar in the league. And he's gone from basically being that one-man fast break, you know, athletic specimen to a more finesse offensive player. And we've seen the work that he's put in. It's very clear that he's more skilled now.
And yeah. I mean, now this season he's averaging 24 points, 5 assists, 9 rebounds. But what would Porzingis have to do to jump Giannis? You know, what would he have to do to add to his game to make him a better prospect?
That's a good point. I mean, the way Porzingis is projecting, you know, it looks like he's going to get the most out of his ability. And that's really isn't that really just the most important thing? I mean, we want to see guys, you know, maximize and fulfill their potential. So with Kristaps, it just comes down to strength and being able to finish in the paint with anybody. Obviously at 7'3", he could already handle it pretty well, but his handle will continue to improve. I think his toughness, his mental toughness, his leadership, his awareness, physically, I don't think, you know, I mean, skill-wise, I don't think there's anything you look at and you're like, he's not going to be able to do that. So for me, it really is a toss-up. And, you know, as the more I think about this, I mean, you can't go wrong either way. And for the Knicks to get this kid, as you watch him at the fourth, as the fourth pick in the draft, is obviously a steal. And, you know, a great question is, you know, do you throw Towns into this mix too? There's a plethora of young talent in this league now that, you know, and unique talent, guys at their size doing things that guys at their size just don't usually do or haven't done in the league.
Yeah, that's very true. Moving on from that, we had a trade this past week. Well, actually today, Kyle Korver's onto the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs moved Mike Dunleavy and Mo Williams. So Korver's on the Cavs. The Hawks look like they might be rebuilding. We'll talk about the Korver move first. How do you think he fits with the Cavs? what do you think it means for the Hawks?
You know, a lot of emotion in that Hawks locker room, right? This is this is a guy that had meant a lot to their organization, and you know, them rebuilding and going from that, you know, first round playoff exit team to that, you know, almost getting to the finals team and trying to give LeBron a run, and now Korver joins LeBron. But obviously you're going to help the Cavs stretch the floor. Me and you talk about spacing all the time, and you know, to give a playmaker like LeBron, especially Kyrie, you know, one of the lethal three-point shooters in the game, kind of seems unfair. The rich get richer in this situation, and it's a great move for them. I mean, Korver's going to feel right at home. This is a group that's going to embrace him. Now you put Love on the floor with Korver, you know, and J.R. Smith when he could hit, and you know, all of a sudden the Cavs are even better offensively, more efficient offensively. But for the Hawks, I mean, they were actively looking to shop Millsap too, also. So
yeah, I think this is a great move for the Cavs. Yeah. Like, they're just adding a three-point specialist that, you know, Korver's going to get a ton of open threes, more open threes than he's probably ever had, because he's taken his fair share of contested threes and hit them. But playing with LeBron and Kyrie, we know there's going to be plenty of open shots. Teams are going to have a really tough time defending them, because what are you going to do, come off Korver? And if he gets hot, we've seen him shoot over 40% and close to 50% a few seasons in the NBA. So, I mean, they could really go out there with Kyrie, LeBron, Korver, Love, and Channing Frye at points. Defensively, it might struggle a little bit, but like floor stretching wise, it'd be pretty hard to defend.
Yeah, and you know, anything they do is also in mind. They're keeping in the back of their mind April, May, June, right?
So exactly,
this is something that, you know, thinking about teams like the Warriors and Spurs, and you know, if there was any not knock on the Cavs, but anything that the teams out west do better is shoot the three ball and spread the floor. So I think this is another one of those moves where they have, you know, the ring and the title on their mind. And there are certain that teams that just want to fast forward. And, you know, we as NBA fans do enjoy the regular season. But the first thing that came to my mind is, wow, this is really a power move for a team that already has been offensively efficient this season.
Yeah, exactly. And they pretty much get him for nothing. You know, Dunleavy wasn't having a great season. Mo Williams hasn't really played at all. So, I mean, really worked out for the Cavs. You mentioned this before. Mark Stein released a piece talking about some possible trade rumors. First off, we'll start off with Paul Millsap. Obviously, they moved Korver the Hawks, so they could shop Millsap. Millsap's a free agent at the end of the year, so it's going to be tough for them to get good value. Do you think he gets moved? Teams that were interested were like the Kings, the Raptors.
I heard something about the 76ers, which is kind of funny, but
I don't think that. I mean, he has 1 year left. He's a free agent at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Raptors would be really interesting, because that would give them another inside threat to contend with Cleveland. And that's obviously – we have always spoken about their front court, and we've spoken about how, you know, they don't really have a score. I mean, Valanciunas could score, but to give them a real threat, the guy that could also – has worked on his three ball, I think giving that – you know, Toronto actively pursuing them, I don't know what package would they put together, but that would definitely be able – that would be some sort of – combat to what Cleveland has done and give them, I think, a real chance.
Yeah, and then also the Kings were interested. I mean, the Kings are looking to try to make that playoff push. We touched on it last episode. You know, maybe adding a player like this could help them.
Millsap and Cousins would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about Millsap that a lot of people, I mean, underestimate him is his defense. He's one of the best defensive players. I think he got a few Defensive Player of the Year votes last year. Think that he could have a big impact, but I think the problem with this trade is going to be the asking price, because the Hawks are going to want, you know, a decent value, but a team's not going to really want to give up a lot because they don't know if he's going to stay.
He also plays the high-low game real well, because he's played with good centers and Horford for a long time in his career, and I think he would definitely – it was Sacramento. I think he would definitely help out Cousins a little bit and make it a lot easier for him. You know, sometimes you worry about – you know, putting another big guy out there with DeMarcus, because he requires a lot of, you know, touches and offensive attention. But he's played the high-low game well, and Millsap is a willing passer too.
And Millsap would probably be the best front court player he's ever played with.
Yeah, maybe the best player he's ever played
with. Yeah, that's very true. So, and then moving on from Millsap, the Nuggets, they're another team mentioned in this. Nurkic was available, they said. Gallinari, Chandler, Farid as well. So who do you think could be a team that could pursue these players?
We know about the 2011 deal that the Knicks and Nuggets have made. So could we see a some sort of reunion in the Denver Knicks revisiting their trade past? Obviously, we know Melo won't be involved in any trades, but I think that, you know, the Knicks adding another piece here. Man, Nurkic is good, but and I don't think Chandler and Gallinari would be pieces that the Knicks would be interested in again at this point. But I mean, that big guy out there, that young big kid out there in Denver, is pretty darn good.
Who else would you see any possibility of making a move for Denver? You know, these are solid pieces. Like Wilson Chandler and Gallinari can really give you a scoring boost.
I could see like an Eastern contender, or a Western contenders out west that's trying to like a. I mean, I won't think the Jazz would probably stay away from them, but maybe
Memphis. Do you think Memphis could be interested? Maybe add some more offense.
Maybe Memphis. I think
Wilson Chandler seems like a player that
Charlotte
might
maybe could. Charlotte be interested in adding something?
Yeah, Charlotte. I think Charlotte could add a player too.
Yeah.
Another team talked about was my Brooklyn Nets. Mark Stein said the Nets are asking 2 first round picks for Brook Lopez. So, I mean, they're keeping his value high. They're not really going to move him unless somebody offers him a good deal.
They're asking what for Brook?
2 first round picks.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the right thing to do. I mean, you got to value your only asset you really have. So, also, it looks like, you know, with Winslow being out for the season, the Heat or another team mentioned in the article, Dragic, you know, is the person that they're looking to shop. He could add, you know, a point guard skills to a team, but the Heat might be asking too much. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, Dragic has, you know, went from, you know, what was he, third? I think he was third team All NBA a couple years ago.
He had a really good season with his
Sons. Yeah. So his level of play has fallen off a little bit. He's been one of the bright spots, though, for a team that's had a very rough season. I mean, he's averaging 19 a game. And, you know, close to 7 assists and, you know, 35 minutes. So him and Whiteside really the only reasons for any optimism. But Tyler Johnson's been a nice, you know, nice spark for them at times. And, you know,
yeah, he had a nice poster on, I think, Lou Williams last night.
Yeah, so crazy. So, yeah, I don't think anybody will bite with Dragic.
Well, enough about the NBA.
Yeah.
We got some playoff games, you know, wild card weekend. Harris is a New York Giants fan. I'm a Green Bay Packers fan. So we're going to give you a little prediction for the game. Harris, I'll let you start this one off.
Well, there's a good chance, not a good chance, there's a reasonable chance that me and Faye will not be speaking next week unless the game is not played for some odd reason. So I would say there's about a 99.9% chance that we will not speak because one of us will be absolutely devastated that our season is coming to a premature end. The Packers, you know, 4-6, Rodgers talks about, you know, we could run the table. And, you know, he was vintage a couple years ago for the relaxed thing. And he's as calm and cool as customer as they come. And he rattles off 6 wins for Green Bay. And you know at the level that he's playing at. But the Giants, 11-5. For all NFL fans out there, their defense is much improved from the last couple of seasons, which has put them over the top. Eli wasn't great. But we know what can happen with playoff Eli. And you had mentioned to me last week how it could come down to our linebackers. I'm not concerned about the secondary for the Giants, but you could tell me about the Packers' offensive line better than I can. But to stop somebody like Aaron Rodgers in the playoff, that's going to take a lot of pressure. And in the past, that's been the formula for the Giants' success and stopping the run. But the Packers rely heavily on their pass game. The weather's going to be crazy cold. It's the frozen tundra. It's going to be low scoring. I'm going to take the Giants 21-17, but I could honestly see this game as a coin flip. I know you're going to take Green Bay. You're going to tell me why, but I think they'll do enough. And I think Eli will turn into January Eli, unless I'm hoping so, Nick.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the one concern for the Giants would be their offense. It hasn't really hit on all cylinders. Eli has looked a lesser of himself this season. You know, he did just turn 36. The Giants do have one of the best defenses in the NFL. You know, their secondary is very good. They have 3 really good corners. Cromartie, Apple, Jenkins has been a great pickup. So, I mean, that's going to be an issue. I mentioned to you, I think the linebacker matchup is going to be big. The Giants have struggled with tight ends. Jared Cook is healthy. He's looking good. And Ty Montgomery is a matchup problem for any team. You know, he's wide receiver converted to running back. He can run the ball, break off big plays, or he can option out of the backfield. So matchup, and obviously you touch on Rodgers. He's on fire. These last 6 games, he said, I'm going to run the table. and he threw 18 touchdowns, no interceptions. So I think the one concern for the Packers, though, is their defense. Their corners are really banged up. Obviously, Odell Beckham's one play away from a touchdown at any point of the field. I mean, that's my concern. I would just pretty much put a safety over the top and double Odell the whole game, yep. Get some pressure on Eli. I got this one. I think I'm going to go Green Bay 27, Giants 21.
Okay. Well, I think one thing's for sure is that this is the premier game of the weekend.
I think, yeah, this is probably the best
match of all weekend. Houston getting started now, and we know about the quarterback issues with Carr's injury. So Wild Card Weekend is featuring four Super Bowl champions. And Wilson, Rodgers, Eli, and Roethlisberger. So there's some experience.
I think the Detroit and Seattle game is going to probably be better than most people thought.
Yeah, that's tonight, right?
Yeah, that's tonight. I mean, Miami and Steelers and Pittsburgh's going to be tough because Miami's obviously without Tannehill, and the Steelers have that high octane offense. So that'll be, I mean, it'd be tough for Miami to get the win. So I'm picking the Steelers in that one. I think Houston and Oakland's pretty much a toss up because both teams are really struggling offensively. Obviously, the Raiders were out Derek Carr, and the Texans are just bad on offense. So. Yeah.
So your point is Oakland's not going to go into New England if they win this game and beat the Patriots.
I don't think either of those teams really stand a chance.
Yeah, they were talking about New England potentially getting a double bye because they get, you know.
It pretty much is, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, they could probably rest Brady in the fourth quarter of the next game.
Yeah, and then they'll have to play the winner of whatever, Pittsburgh.
It's kind of ridiculous. And it's like a cakewalk kind of for the Patriots. I mean, to the AFC Championship game. And then, I mean, I think – Pittsburgh probably could knock them off, but it would take a good game offensively and defensively from them.
Yeah, well, same story, you know, same story in the AFC. NFC, you know, depending on what happens in the Giants-Packers games, that could have a lot of impact on, you know, a lot of unknown, though. Matt Ryan has not really ever been a big-time playoff performer, and the Cowboys, we know about them as far as Prescott and Elliott being first, you know, year players, so – those are the two teams with byes in the first round. So there's a lot of unknown in the NFC. But, you know, Russell Wilson's been there. Rodgers has been there. Eli's been there. And it's going to be interesting to see the newcomers versus the establishment going forward. So NFC is going to be real interesting to me.
Yeah, I think the NFC is definitely more of a toss-up.
Right.
Because, like, there's so many possibilities that could happen. I think this Green Bay Giants game is going to have a big impact on the NFC playoffs.
Yeah. We could easily see the winner of that going on a run, and we've seen it many times.
Both teams, yeah.
Yeah, we've seen it many times before. I mean, you know, the wild card is definitely a threat, and it's happened many a times. And, you know, both times the Giants have won championships. Not only have they gone through Green Bay, but they've done it on the road for the most part. Only one home playoff win for Eli in his entire career, and he's got two championships. So that's very rare to –
Yeah, that is definitely interesting. So, I mean, great game. Harris, this will probably be the last time I talk to you for a while.
Yeah, you know what? Get Matt on the line because if your Packers knock us out tomorrow, I'll see you after the All-Star break. I'll need some time to cool off before I talk hoops with you again. And no, it's going to be a good one, man. I wish you the best of luck. I know
may the best team win.
How good the Packers have been to you for the most part. I mean, it got you a ring. Some disappointment and heartbreak. For the most part, I think you've enjoyed the Packers.
Eight straight seasons of the playoffs. I can't complain.
Yeah, for the last decade or so. Post Favre, didn't know what it was going to be. And then, you know, one of the best quarterbacks of all time sitting in your lap again. So,
all right, that wraps it up. And we'll talk to you guys next time.
All right, man. Be safe.